You're listening to Second Breaks. I'm Lou Blazer.
So he was like a colleague, and he was going to retire around the same time. I said, so what are you going to do? He said, well, I am going to sleep in the first month. I have no idea. And I'm like, oh, my God. You'd have to shoot me if that were going to be what I was going to be doing. There was no way I could do that.
Right, right. What an impact. You walked away from that. That's where you retired from.
I did. People used to always say to me, what will you do when the Holocaust survivors are no longer living? Oh. And to myself, I used to always say, I'm not going to be here. I'm not going to be doing this work because I can't even imagine doing it without the Holocaust survivors. I was afraid of being alone because I had been surrounded with people. Connections were important. So I was very afraid of what was it going to be to wake up and not be around anyone, to be with myself all the time.
Hey, hey, I hope you're doing well whenever it is that you're listening to this episode. You know, I've done a lot of stories on the podcast, but there is one type that I'm always fascinated to dig into, and that is the story of someone who retires or has retired from a job or a career that they love. I've had a few of those on the podcast over the years, and I just find it so interesting to learn about how someone who loves their work plans to or goes about the thought process to prepare for them leaving that role. And like I said, I've had a few of those conversations over the years, and today I'm so pleased to add to that list and share with you Merle Saferstein's story. Now, the first time that I had an inkling of her retirement story was when I was interviewing her for a previous episode to discuss the topic of journaling. And as we got to talking about that episode, I'll put a link to the episode in the show notes, but as I got talking with her for that episode, I sensed that there was something interesting, that there was an interesting story behind her retirement. You see, Merle played a significant role before she retired. Significant not only to the organization for whom she worked, but also to her personally. Merle spent 26 years as a Holocaust educator, where she worked with hundreds of Holocaust survivors, helping them to leave their legacy. Right before she retired, she was the director of outreach at the Holocaust Documentation and Education Center in Miami. And you can just imagine that planning to retire from that role was a serious thing for Merle. She knew that when it was time for her to walk away, it was going to leave a big hole. How can it not, right? And so it was very important for her to know what would come next for her, her next chapter, so to speak. So she underwent a period of self-examination in preparation for this transition, wherein she ended up asking herself a bunch of questions, 25 questions, over a period of a year leading up to her retirement. Now, since her retirement, she has written a few books, including Living Your Legacy, which became the basis of her legacy programs and courses. Now, in this episode, we're going to talk about her previous role at the Holocaust Center, her preparation for retirement, the questions that she asked herself then, you know, questions that I wished I had asked myself when I left my corporate career. Okie dokie, let me get out of the way and I'll catch up with you at the back end. Here's my conversation with Merle Saferstein. I thought we could start this conversation with just sort of like a level setting to get our listeners in context. You had told me the last time we chatted that you retired, but obviously you are doing all kinds of other things. So can you just like set the story for us? When did you retire? What were you doing before you retired? And then when you retired?
In 1986, I took a job at a Holocaust Documentation and Education Center in Miami, Florida. And after a few months, I became the Director of Educational Outreach at the center. And I worked there for 26 years. So I had the great privilege of working with 500 Holocaust survivors. And my job was basically to help them pass along their memory of their legacy of remembrance. And so we did all kinds of programming. I had a speakers bureau where we sent out speakers to about 18,000 students a year. We did a visual arts and writing contest. And we had a teacher institute where each year in June we gathered teachers together from all grades to help them learn about the Holocaust. And we sat them with Holocaust survivors. So for the 5 days of the institute, they had the opportunity to sit with five different Holocaust survivors and learn their stories and really get personal with them. And then we also did a program called Student Awareness Days, where we gathered students, anywhere from 250 to 850 students at a time, that sat at tables of 10 with a Holocaust survivor and a facilitator. You know, we made sure that they understood what the Holocaust was, what led to the Holocaust. Mm. We had a survivor who spoke from the podium, always in the beginning, especially someone who was in a concentration camp, because there are lots of different experiences of survivors. People think of survivors as only having been in a concentration camp, but some were partisans in the woods, some were children who were in hiding, some were parents who sent their children away to England during the Kinder transport. So there were lots of different experiences. Some were hiding underground in bunkers.
Right.
And then we let the students ask the survivors any questions that they wanted. And then in the afternoon, we switched the focus and we said, okay, so these survivors were teenagers just like you were. And they had the same hopes and dreams. They went to the movies. They played outside. They had friends. They went to school. And then because of prejudice, their whole lives were turned upside down. And so what's going on in your life in terms of prejudice that you can relate to some of this?
Mm-hmm.
We live in Miami, is a very culturally diverse community. A lot of people come here from other countries because of persecution and whatever. And so the conversations were always very rich and became much more personal to the students.
Mm-hmm. I can imagine. It's the stories that we hear and it becomes real for us, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And to learn firsthand as opposed to reading in a book or seeing
a
movie.
Exactly, right.
There's nothing like that.
Yeah.
So by the end of my career at the Holocaust Center, we had a grant that we had to do and they wanted to know how many students' lives we had touched in. So starting in 86, which was the beginning of the Holocaust Center student programming when I came on. And I spent a lot of time figuring that out based on the programs, how many teachers would touch a student's life. And we came close to 1 million students that were touched in the 26 years.
Oh, my goodness. What a legacy. What an impact. You walked away from that. That's where you retired from.
I did. So what happened was, as I was getting closer to 60, to my mid-60s, I started thinking about what it was that I wanted to do. People used to always say to me, what will you do when the Holocaust survivors are no longer living?
Oh.
And to myself, I used to always say, I'm not going to be here. I'm not going to be doing this work because I can't even imagine doing it without the Holocaust survivors.
Right.
So in my mind, I kind of knew that I would be leaving. But I also knew that there were other things I wanted to do in my life, and I was ready to be my own boss.
Hmm.
And while I loved my job, there were times that I felt, to describe it honestly, would be like a plant in a flower pot that can only grow so big because the base is only so big.
Yeah.
And I just had that feeling like there was more, that I was, you know, doing this pretty much the same things over and over again, even though each time it was meaningful and impactful. I knew that it was time to go. So I at first thought I would retire at 70. But in 2010, I was approaching 2011, realizing that I was going to be 67.
Mm.
And I said, you know what? I think it's time. So at that point is when I started, beginning of January of 2011, started to look at retiring at the end of December of 2011.
Gotcha. So you were, 67 when you retired? Is that
67
it?
67 when I retired.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And then obviously you knew you were going to do something else. You were going to, you know, do other things or pursue other things. Did you know at that point what you wanted to do, or you were still exploring or thinking about it?
What I decided to do was I decided to take that year and pose questions to myself. Basically, what would my life look like as a result of retiring and knowing that I will not walk out the door of the Holocaust Center until I'm very clear. So what I knew in January, I knew that I wanted to teach. I did not know what I wanted to teach. I had absolutely no idea, but I am an educator. That's who I am. And I knew I wanted to teach. I also knew that I wanted to write a book that I had started to research in 1985 and then got the job in 86 and couldn't do it. So for 25 years or so, this book was just in my head.
Right.
I kept thinking about it and knowing that someday I'm going to write this story. And I also knew that I wanted to volunteer. So those were the three things that I was clear that I wanted to do, but I had absolutely no idea what they were going to look like. So what I did was I bought a laptop. It was my first laptop. And I wrote down these questions. And throughout the year, I, instead of journaling in my journal about this, most of the time, and sometimes it would just come out, but most of the time when I was exploring what my life was going to look like, I did it in a file called The Next Chapter. And it turned out to be about 180 pages by the time I finished, of answering the questions and going through and sorting out and figuring out. So literally on December 29th, 2011, when I walked out the door, I knew exactly where I was going. I was so clear about what was next, but it took me all that time to figure it out.
That's awesome. No, your retirement was voluntary, right? It wasn't like, oh, you have to retire.
Absolutely.
Okay, so there was no
totally.
Okay. And so did they know? Did you tell them this is my last year?
So what happened was I knew from January on, and I started talking to people about it and saying, when do you think it's appropriate to retire? And everyone said, you only have to give 2 weeks notice. And I'm like, that is absolutely not going to work. My job was a big job, and I felt compelled to train people.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one day my boss said, oh, so next year's going to be the anniversary of our institute, 20 years of having this institute. So I want to make it really big. I want to invite all the teachers back. And I sat at that meeting, and I had just such a bad feeling, like I'm not being authentic when I'm sitting here pretending like I'm going to be doing this.
Right.
And anyway, I decided not to listen to anyone else. And I decided to follow my gut. And my gut said, tell them in May. And at first it was May 24th. God only knows why I picked that day, but that was the day. It was right before Memorial Day holiday. And I figured I'll tell them, I'll go, go off for a few days and whatever. But as that got closer, I was getting so nervous about telling them that I decided not to wait. I said, well, why do I have to wait till the 24th? I've created this day in my mind anyway. So I decided to tell my boss on May 10th, and I told nobody else at the Holocaust Center that I was doing this until I told her. I think because it was a big job, because I was really committed because of my feelings toward the survivors, I was so nervous about telling her, about telling the survivors. And I'll never forget, I literally practiced how I was going to tell her, how if her reaction was one way, I was going to walk out. I just had it all prepared. It was crazy. I made myself crazy. And I walked in and I said, I need to talk to you. Is this a good time? Can I close the door? And she said, yeah. And she had no clue. And I told her, and her reaction fascinated me because she was like, how did you ever make this decision? What are you going to do? You're not someone who can just do nothing. And then she said, and when I retire, I want to talk to you because I have no idea how I'm going to ever do this. So it turned out to be really great. And then there was a survivor that we worked with who was in charge of the documentation department. And she said, I would like you to tell Rita before you tell anyone else. Oh. And so I went to Rita and I told her because I had worked with her all those years too. Mm-hmm. And then I called the president and told him. Mm-hmm. And then she called the staff meeting. And it was really interesting because she looked at everyone's faces. She asked me if I told anyone. I said no, but she was looking to see. I think she really wanted to know if anyone knew. And it was clear. I mean, everyone was shocked.
Right.
So that was like, thank God I didn't tell them. And then I started telling the survivors. And that was, you know, for me, that was really hard. But it was so incredible because every single survivor said, you know, you've worked hard. You've done this for us, yeah. And we appreciate you. And basically what I said was that I was going to write a book. And I said, it's time for me.
Yes.
You know, they all knew I journaled. They saw me working on my journal project because I would do that on lunch breaks if I took a lunch break. But I did it even more so. I purposely would go in the lunchroom and sit and work on my journal project during lunch so they could see that I was really doing something.
Right.
But they all said, you know, they gave me their blessings and said, go write. You should be doing that. And so it made it so much easier for me. You know, then I was part of the hiring process and I trained the person who followed me. That was a really interesting experience to have someone shadowing me, you know, just sitting at my desk watching and learning. Turns out that, I mean, this is so crazy, but since I left the center, there have been 7 people who have replaced my position.
Wow.
So the first one who I trained, I mean, really trained, the day her contract was up, day one of that end of the contract, she walked out the door.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. So that was really kind of hard to see that. And I had no idea.
Yeah.
Really. Happened since, but
how about the family's reaction to your decision of retirement? How did that go?
That was great. Everyone gave me their blessing. They knew it was time.
Yeah.
And so there was no issue with that at all.
Yeah.
And they also knew that I wasn't going to be sitting home doing nothing.
Yeah. That was never an option for Merle.
Never. And it's interesting because when my husband retired 4 years ago, Who retired first?
Did you retire first? Or?
Oh, I did.
Okay.
I retired before he did.
Okay.
And he didn't want to retire, but he was basically, I kind of forced him into it. It was time.
Mm.
And I kept saying to him, you know, let's talk about what you can do and volunteer opportunities. And I would take him with me to some of the volunteer things. They seemed to really enjoy it. And he kept saying, you know, Merle, that's your thing. It's not my thing. And so he walked out the door with nothing. And
like no plans.
No plan. And never did anything. Never did it.
That's interesting.
So I know. I mean, we couldn't be more different. Even though we've been married for 56 years and together for almost 5 before that.
But at the same time, nobody was saying, well, why are you even thinking about, like, why aren't you just relaxing and not doing any, you know, was anybody saying that to you?
Yes. There were people who were saying that, you know, like, well, why don't you just, you know, just relax? And one man who worked at the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum in Washington, I was speaking to him. So he was like a colleague and he was going to retire around the same time. I said, so what are you going to do?
Yeah.
He said, Merle, I am going to sleep in the first month. I have no idea. And I'm like, oh my God, you have to shoot me if that were going to be what I was going to be doing. There was no way I could do that.
Right. And I'm imagining that to walk away from such a job, such a role that has meant something to you and then to not know what you're going to do next is just impossible to just consider, right?
It is absolutely impossible. And I'm someone who, I'm only fulfilled when I'm doing something meaningful.
Yeah.
And so I don't think I could be happy if I didn't have a purpose in my life.
Right.
And so that was really important to me. I was so grateful that I spent the time and figured it out before. It really made a big difference for me.
Hey, I am jumping in for a quick second to invite you to subscribe to We're All Getting Older, or WAGO for short. WAGO is a weekly publication about and for midlifers who are into getting better as we get older. Every Sunday, I send out a newsletter with one idea to explore and inspire action toward being the people that we've always wanted to be. I would love for you to join me in this endeavor, project, quest to continue to get better as we get older. You can check it out at lewblazer.com/newsletter or check the link in the show notes. Okie dokie, let's get back to the show. If you don't mind, would you share with us some of the questions that you were thinking about during that year that you were journaling?
I'd be happy to. One of the questions, the very first question was who am I? And that question was really, I wrote for like 4 pages. And then the next question was, who will I be when I'm no longer the director of educational outreach? Because that was really, you know, when you are tied to a title. And so I said, well, before I write about this, I'm going to just go back and look at what I wrote when I wrote about who am I. And I was absolutely shocked that I never once mentioned my position, my title.
Did you find it easy to answer that second question?
It was absolutely easy because I had never, when I wrote Who Am I had never even identified my position. I never said, I'm the director, you know, one of the things I am is the director of educational outreach. I didn't say that. I just wrote about who I am personally. And so that question was like, okay, that's a no-brainer. I don't have to worry about that one because I'm not tied to that. That's not my identity.
But I just want to pause there, if you don't mind, because I want to ask your advice on this. Because I imagine that in your work, you probably run into people who are very tied to their titles or to their positions or their job roles and have a hard time answering that. I'm telling you, I had a hard time answering that question. What might you recommend people do when they run into that question and they stare at a blank page?
That's so interesting because my husband is still tied to his position. He was a podiatrist and 4 years later, and we were just in the doctor's office and he said, you know, I'm a doctor too.
Yes.
You are. What would I recommend? That's a really hard question. I think it's so personal. Maybe because I journal, it's very easy for me. I know myself really well. Mm-hmm. But I would say, who are you to others? You know, not just in your position, but in your role in life. And so it kind of ties in with the legacy work I do, because in the legacy work, I talk about the different legacies we leave in different situations. For example, we leave a legacy in our family, who we are to our family, who we are professionally, who we are in our community, who we are to perfect strangers. So those are the kinds of things. So look at whose life you're impacting, who has influenced and impacted your life, and in what ways. So those are some of the ways that one might begin to look at
Yeah. That's awesome. Yes. So it's almost like the other parts of you that maybe you haven't paid attention to because you were 100% paying attention to just one part, which is who I was before I left my corporate role. All right. Sorry. So that was the second question. Sorry, I stopped you there. But yeah, go ahead.
So another one was, what will I need to be satisfied and fulfilled and to realize my dreams? What steps am I going to need to take to get to from here to where I want to be? Mm-hmm. How will I resign? How do I foresee my exit from my job?
Yes.
What am I most afraid of? Am I willing and ready to give up my paycheck?
Were you, if you don't mind sharing, were you afraid of something at that point?
Oh, I was really afraid of how we were going to live financially.
Okay.
I was very afraid of that. I was afraid of what my life would look like really afraid of how is this going to look. I was afraid of being alone because I had been surrounded with people. Oh, yes. People, connection is really important. So I was very afraid of what was it going to be to wake up and not be around anyone, to be with myself all the time.
Yeah.
And how was I going to find a way to be with other people? You know, what was that going to look like? So there were a lot of fears
that
I had.
That is awesome.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Financially was the biggest one. I was really concerned about that. But I went to a financial advisor who said, no, you know, we crunched the numbers. He said, you're going to be fine. I don't honestly think if I didn't work, I would have been. You would have been fine. Mm-hmm. I think it was important that I did.
Mm-hmm. I wish that I had these questions when I was leaving my corporate job because...
Well, I'm happy to share them with whoever they will help. So what will it be like to be my own boss? What will my schedule be? What is my purpose?
The schedule one is interesting because I think, you know, you're so the structure of a job, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty disciplined, you know, and I can discipline myself. But I know for a lot of people, this would be really hard because suddenly
you end up watching Netflix all day.
Right. And especially if you're writing a book and you know, suddenly you're blocked. Good luck. Not easy. So what are my goals? Let's see. Who am I most concerned about telling I'm leaving and why?
Mm.
What am I giving up? What am I going to miss? What can I yet become? What do I need to do in order to take this leap of faith? What is pulling at me? And what will it look like when I walk out the door? So those are some of the questions. And what am I going to miss and what won't I miss?
Oh, yeah. So in retrospect, what was the most difficult one for you to like answer? As in like, I don't know how to answer this, or you know, that you had to spend time really thinking about how you're going to respond to it.
I think that because I journal so much, it's so easy for me to write. So, you know, I asked questions that I really wanted to explore the answers to, and I did. And I spent a lot of time answering these questions. And, the difficulty was just, what is this going to look like? And am I going to regret the fact that I walked out the door?
I have a feeling that the answer to that years later is no.
No. No. Not for one second. Not for one second.
You know, hindsight is 20/20, as they say. So would you have changed anything from how you did your retirement from the moment you decided to how long it took for you to plan to actually how you pursued the things that you pursued? Would you have changed anything?
Probably would have retired sooner.
Oh, a lot of people say that. I've heard that from people, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Let me qualify that. For people who aren't bored, I hear that all the time. Because I've also spoken with people who are bored to death after retirement.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And so for them, it's not, they don't say that.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Yeah.
But for me, my life, you know, it's interesting because my life since retirement, I have met so many people and have new friends. It's really been interesting to see what's happened and what's changed and who is no longer as appealing to me or interesting to me as what used to be. It's really changed.
Yeah. I wonder if, you know, if I could also, tap into your experience and sort of like how you might advise other people. Because the other thing that I hear from people, especially those who've been like doing one thing or in one industry for a long time. I've been in the banking industry for 25 years. What in the world am I going to do outside of the banking industry? Like, they can't see how their skills are going to translate or how they could be useful elsewhere. Because I've also heard people saying, well, I've been in the banking industry, but I don't want to work in the banking industry after I retire. So, but they don't know how to translate. You had a fantastic way of just like weaving into your next activities the other parts of yourself that may have been dormant. Or like, what might you suggest people who are like thinking that way?
What I would suggest is an exercise that I do in my legacy classes in the first session of the classes. Mm-hmm. And that is make a list of 20 things that bring you joy.
Mm.
And then go back and look at the last time that that was part of your life, whether it was that you did it or that you, whatever. And I always say to everyone, if you have these things on your list that bring you joy and you haven't done them for a significant period of time, then what are you thinking? Why haven't you done them? And so there are other things I ask along with that is, like, does this cost money? Is this something that your parents would have done or do?
Mm-hmm.
Is this something you see yourself doing in 5 years from now? But the real question is the first question, and that is, when is the last time that this was part of your life?
Yeah.
And so if you can identify 20 things that bring you joy and then pick out from those things that, okay, this makes me happy, then I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
And, you know, in many cases, one's purpose in life, you know, the things that feed your soul are going to be right there. And so I think that that's probably the very best way to look at what you might consider coming next.
Oh my goodness. I love that. For myself, I wish that I had known you 10 years ago.
10 years ago, I probably wouldn't have been able to do this.
You know, because this is exactly the kind of conversation that would have been useful for me when I was contemplating leaving my corporate career. But that's wonderful. Well, thank you so much for sharing. Now, the books, plural, I'm going to put that the links to the books on the show notes. But what about the courses? Can you talk a little bit about the courses that you offer and where we can find more information about those courses?
I'm really in the process of creating a new class.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm going to do is probably take 3 chapters from each of the 2 books, mm-hmm. the legacy journal books. So maybe one 6-week session will be on parenting and marriage and on being a woman. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I haven't decided yet, but a variety of subjects. And then the way I envision this is probably do 3 sets of classes. So each class having 6 topics, and then there are 22 topics in the book, probably some I won't use. And I'm going to be advertising that on my website.
Gosh.
You know, that'll be on my website, on Facebook. I'm on other social networks, and so that will be probably the best way. Anyone who's interested can certainly email me as a result of doing that from my website.
Right. Well, that obviously I'm going to put a link to the show notes as well. This has been fantastic. Well, thank you so much. This is a gift to me,
okay.
You sharing your story and your experience. Really, I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you. It was really, honestly, my pleasure. Thank you, Lou.
I want to thank Merle again for returning to the show, for sharing her experiences and personal story with us. You're going to find all the links on the show notes at secondbreaks.com. Thank you, my dear listener friend, for joining me today. If you liked this episode or the show in general, I would love it if you would share it with a friend or two to help the podcast grow and reach more midlifers. I will be back in a couple of weeks with a new episode, a new conversation that explores how we can best navigate these midlife transitions and grow as we get older. Okie dokie, so I'll see you in a couple weeks. Oh, and don't forget to subscribe to We're All Getting Older. Okie dokes, until then, keep on making your dent, my friend. Cool beans.